there's so much news, it can be hard to keep up with what it all means for you, your family, and your community. The Consider This podcast from NPR features our award-winning journalism. 6 days a week, we bring you a deep dive on a news story and provide the context and analysis that helps you make sense of the news. We get behind the headlines. We get to the truth. Listen to the Consider This podcast from NPR.
If you're just joining us, I'm Johnny O'Hanson Jr., and you're listening to In Black America from KUT Radio. And we're speaking with Dr. Karita L. Brown, professor of sociology at Emory University, oral historian, and author of The Battle of the Black Mind. Dr. Brown, talk to us about the Freedmen's Bureau. I found it interesting that it played a significant role of how we have public schools in this country to this day.
The Freedmen's Bureau was a mighty institution. The Freedmen's Bureau was a federal agency brought about by an act of Congress, okay, right after the Civil War in 1865. And what did the Freedmen's Bureau do? It helped newly freed African Americans reunify their families. So many families had been torn apart during slavery, and it was one of the first things we wanted to do was find our people. The Freedmen's Bureau also established the Freedmen's Bank. This bank allowed African Americans to not only have a place to save their money, but they got to earn interest and take out loans from that bank. And that allowed, during the Reconstruction era, African Americans purchased 15 million acres of land. But one of the main contributions of the Freedmen's Bureau was it catalyzed the public school system.
WRCT Pittsburgh, music for your inner robot.
Thank you. morning blues. Blues, how do you do? Good morning blues. Blues, how do you do? Babe, I feel all right, but I come to worry you. Babe, it's Christmas time, and I wanna see Santa Claus. Babe, it's Christmas time, and I wanna see Santa Claus. Don't show me my pretty baby, I'll break all of the laws. Santa Claus, listen to my plea. Santa Claus, listen to my plea. Don't send me nothing for Christmas, but my baby back.
Thank you. You to know about a new low-dose CT scan that can detect lung cancer early. It takes only 60 seconds and could save your life. You took the first step, now take the next. Visit savebythescan.org for a simple quiz to see if you're eligible and talk to your doctor about screening. Savebythescan.org is brought to you by the American Lung Association's Lung Force Initiative and the Ad Council.
WRCT Pittsburgh. This is Ebony Spectrum and In Black America.
So last week, I don't know when y'all gonna watch this. Tiff is mad at me. Just recently.
Yes. You said it right last week.
Okay, I can say that. But it really was last week. So Tiff is gonna be like, say last month.
No, last week.
Recently, Al Sharpton met with the Target CEO. Mm-hmm. He put up a post with him in the picture with the Target CEO, Franklin Richardson, who's his board chair, and one of his advisors. And people were relentless. They went off on him. How dare you do this? Blah, 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 blah. Jamal Bryan later shared that he was in that meeting, actually. But people, including me, mm-hmm. were upset that Jamal wasn't there, but Jamal was there. And so I'm bringing this up as an example of something. Reverend Al's tactics are different. His tactics are, when I'm doing something, I'm going to tell you all because I want, in his mind, I want to be accountable to the people so that you know what I've done. That is a tactic. There are civil rights leaders, including Reverend Jackson, who embrace that tactic. There are others who think that if you advertise what you've done, it's an endorsement, or it says that now, don't worry, y'all, I got it, we're good. Yeah. And that's an approach, right? And there's broad disagreement on which way is right or wrong. Either one could be right or wrong.
I was going to ask, do you have an opinion on which one is right or wrong?
I think the thing that I would, and I feel bad because I have not talked to him about this. I would invite him into considering everything not needing to be in the press, mm-hmm. especially when the deal is not struck. Mm-hmm. I don't know that my approach is right. I think that there are people who see that and they get energized by him posting like, oh, look, we won a battle. So now maybe we can win the war.
Yeah.
Like, I get that. But I also think that our tactics have to be more sophisticated. Like, there are young business leaders that I would invite into those conversations because they talk to those leaders at those corporations in ways that I don't.
Right.
I think that maybe there shouldn't be one at the table or just two because there were four, but like have different types of people at the table for those
100%.
Meetings. Anyway,
Well, I had a challenge, I'll say.
Yeah.
Because it looked like a win for Target. Like, you got this picture, you got to go promote it. I will say this about Rev. He invited me to join him on his radio show weekly, where we would talk politics and help me build a following. During my time at MSNBC, I think he tried to be helpful while I was there, and extended himself to me. So I appreciate that from Reverend Sharpton. I just want to be very transparent about that. I also want to be very transparent about the fact that there is this perception that Reverend Sharpton is a leader in Black America. He is a leader, yes. There's a very tiny sect of Black America who follows the steps of Reverend Sharpton. I do not believe, or I don't, I won't say I believe, I know that he does not lead the masses as he once did.
Well, who does, though?
That's my point.
Okay.
We are a leaderless movement, to your point. We're a leaderless movement at this point. There is no, you know, back in the day, pre-Twitter and, you know, Instagram, we had five to 10 leaders. And even all the leaders didn't get shine. You know, Dr. Dorothy Height was a member at that table. She did not always get her shine. Yeah. You know, there are a lot of women in the movement, Black women in the movement, who did not get the shine. Right. Of national leadership. So when you think of civil rights, who you think of? Dr. King and Malcolm X. That's the first two. And it's not really like that anymore. Well, there's a ton that we probably think of, but you know, you ask your average person.
Yeah, that's fair.
Reverend Jackson.
Yes. Well, yeah. Reverend Jackson, Hosea though, Williams. Was post, but I think they were Andy post Young. Civil post Jim Crow. Post civil rights. Like, they came up late. They were under the tutelage. Right, exactly. Yeah. But we could name 100, but I'm saying, like, this, the people you think of are Dr. King and Malcolm X, who had different approaches. I've, you know, Stokely was under them and had an issue with how they were leading. So my point is, because a lot of people had comments about that, and I think we do have leaders who are loyal to power, you know, and loyal to brand. And so I think by posting a picture like that, that people took that, like, what did you specifically get out of this meeting?
Yeah.
Did they write you or National Action Network a check? And even if they did, you know, like, whatever, I don't know what deal was struck, but those were questions and comments that people were asking. And I think to avoid that, to really be of the people, it does take employing some different tactics.
Yeah.
I don't think this is moving with ego. Y'all are telling me, you know, if you have an issue with someone's tactics, it might be ego. I humbly say I don't mean it in ego, but I'm open to you all correcting me if I'm wrong.
Oh, you know, the only thing, though, Tiff, here is I feel like...
Angela's not crying, by the way. For
no, I'm definitely not crying. I just have no voice. I'm sorry. I should talk quieter and it'll be more soothing.
It's sexy and waspy.
Let me. I know this is my Andrew voice.
Somebody's getting it on.
Quiet storm.
Yeah. Somebody's riding.
Hey, everybody.
That.
I just want you to know.
Hey.
That's how Andrew normally sounds. But I was going to say, you know, I think that one conundrum that I do feel, and where I felt for Rev in that moment, is there are whole conversations that are had and people make a decision off of what they see in the picture and develop a narrative. Because all they have is what you said and the image. They don't have a readout from the meeting. And sometimes you can't really do that because you got to keep things moving. So I felt for him a little bit because there was a whole narrative that was shared based on that. Now, the part that I didn't feel for was if you didn't put it out.
Right.
Because there were several other civil rights orgs that had met with Target before and none of us knew.
Mm-hmm.
So as the story began to unfurl, it was like, oh, that's fine. I don't see anything wrong with that. But the masses don't always know that.
Right.
So I'm also curious to know, how much do we tell the people if we also can say, if we agree with Prince, that Black folks are the only one that put our whole strategy up on a website.
Mm-hmm.
What parts of this should we keep to ourselves while we allow the thing to unfurl in our favor? I don't know.
All of it until, like, don't the put deal the is done. Up either. Yeah, you don't.
You're saying keep all of it to ourselves?
At levels
how
of
do we
movement,
get people engaged?
Movement shifting. So the call was put out to the people, and the people have responded.
Mm-hmm.
For the 10th consecutive week, put traffic down by over 9% and Target stores across the country. That has been since the start of the announced boycott, and they're backtracking on DEI. We know that there is an impact being had because there would not have been a call to Reverend Sharpton or anybody else to come step foot at Target headquarters were this not landing in some way or another.
They made it NAN.
At NAN, which either or, doesn't matter. Because if the currency is, we all know this, a picture is worth a thousand words. Nobody knows it better than Reverend Sharpton himself. Nobody knows it better. What I have to believe is that there is a strategy that is not known to me and us that has to be underway, because I don't think Reverend Sharpton would have gifted what is a big piece of the currency for being at the table, which is the image that says a thousand words. Mm-hmm. And in the midst of a protest that's been going on for 9 weeks rather successfully, here comes this new inflection. Why did it happen? It starts to chatter. It, you know, the company can use it any way they want, quite frankly.
Yes.
They can image that however they choose to. You stood
That's
for
my
the
challenge
photo.
With it.
And now it can be used to suggest some things that may not have been right. But who read the fine line to determine that that wasn't right?
So I just, if, all I could just say is, what if he released it? I'm not saying this is true, but what if he released it before they did? Maybe they should have said no pictures allowed.
That's well, what I would have done. You don't get to use me as a photo.
Is there a reason why Jamal Bryant is not in a photo, or is he in a photo?
He's not in a released photo.
There is a reason why Pastor Bishop, as I call him, Jamal Bryant, is not in a published photo.
Yeah.
Because his understanding of the assignment was, we can see where we are. We should keep in touch around how you all are moving back toward this commitment and these benchmarks. And so we've got to be in communication, open discussion about that. But there will not be an announcement around us sitting down until there's an agreement to be signed.
Yeah.
There's still no agreement. So.
There's none of that. There's nothing there, but there is a photo.
Native Land Pod is a production of iHeartRadio in partnership with Reason Choice Media. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
And now you know. Okay, as we move on to our next segment.
All right, folks, Tennessee Congresswoman Diane Harshbarger, a Republican, getting some blowback because she called, talking about Representative Al Green, called him a boy. Roll it.
It's been a long time coming for me, and it's an honor.
The people you serve want to see you. They saw me at the inauguration because we kind of forced our way into the front. That's another story for another day. But then they saw me at the State of the Union, too, and I saved that seat from 9:30 that morning. And who am I sitting across from? Al Green, that gets the first member to ever get ejected. I'm like, Lord Jesus, I was on front of every magazine from here to Knoxville.
But attorneys will get in a courtroom, and they'll fuss and fight with each other. But as soon as it's over, they go out to dinner, have coffee, whatever.
Well, Lord Jesus, they make money that way. They get up and rant and rave and tweet or X or whatever it is. And
hold their signs up during the state.
Now, that's not me. I wanted to go over there and grab a few of them, but Al Green was over here with his cane, and I'm like, gosh, dang it, boy. Put that. He does not need that cane. That cane is a prop. I swear it's not real. And I'm wondering, one of my colleagues said, screw the gold part off of that. See if there's a gun in there. I'm like, I don't know about that man. He's just weird out.
First of all, she claims all the attention she got. Literally, y'all, I don't even know who the hell she is. I ain't never heard of this woman. I have never heard of this congresswoman. So I don't know. You should be thanking Al Green, because the only reason we even mention in your country is because of what she said. Here's Congressman Al Green at a news conference.
Except for today to communicate. And there's also a reference that was made to my cane. I'll talk about all three of these, and then each person here will have an opportunity to speak as well. We're all going to try to be as brief as possible. But this is a topic that many people are very passionate about, both of these topics, meaning the slur on the LGBTQ plus community, as well as a slur on black men. Boy, this is especially sensitive for me because as a child, I remember my father being stopped by a peace officer, and the officer referred to my father as boy. and my mother was girl. And it wasn't just that one time. It was the way society addressed people of color who were of African ancestry at the time. It wasn't said to indicate that you were youthful. It was said to demean, to degrade, to denigrate. It was said such that you would know your place in society. And it was something that you would immediately have said to you. I can remember the child of an Anglo male calling my father boy, the child. My mother was called girl in the presence of her friends on one occasion. Friends, it's not about Al Green. It's about whether black people in this society are going to allow slurs such as this to be normalized. We cannot allow the normalization of these kinds of slurs.
Lauren, your thoughts?
You know, Tennessee rolling. You ever notice how it's always Tennessee? I wonder why that is. You know the history, right? Tennessee. Here we go. And you're right. I had never heard of this member of Congress, and I cover Congress. So I was very surprised to see it. I was like, is that woman a congresswoman? You know, I'm glad Al Green is out saying something about this and that there are people still in Congress who do bring up and don't just sit there and not say anything when these things happen, because increasingly what we find is that nobody says anything. We're talking like racism is not disqualifying. That's just a fact. Racism in politics is not a disqualifying factor, as we found out last November. So I'm glad that he's saying it. He should speak out and speak up, and more Democrats have to join him. We seem to be the only group that never gets joined when something like this happens. And then we're expected to join other groups when stuff happens, you know, to them on their watch and this type of thing when it's something bigoted. So I'm glad he's speaking up. Al Green is a special character, and so good for him.
Yeah, it's always Tennessee, Rebecca. But how dumb? It kind of ain't real. That kind of ain't real. Rebecca, go on. See, they gonna make me cuss on this Wednesday. Go ahead.
Diana knew what she was doing. My great-great-grandfather was in, Henry Carruthers was enslaved in Tennessee. She knows what that means when she said boy, and she said it so casually and kind of just said it like she was saying something so funny, and it was trying to be coy. It's like, come on. Here's the other thing about Congressman Al Green. We shop at the same grocery store. I've seen him with groceries and using his cane. It's a mobility aid because he needs it. I would say that this would be beneath Miss Diana, but considering we really don't know what she does, we really haven't even heard of her. I mean, this just might, okay, cool. She got her 15 seconds. Al Green is a better person than her.
It's a little hard to be, it's something beneath her, Joe, when she already at the bottom of the barrel.
Right, exactly. First shout out to my family, Justin Robinson of the Houston Area Urban League. Saw him in the picture there, I have to text him. But yeah, what's bad, it's not like she said, oh boy. It's not like she was above board and above level other than this slip up. She, to Rebecca's point, she's making a lot of personal slights. Oh, you know, he doesn't need his cane. And oh, you know, he's the only one to get thrown out of, you know, get thrown out of a State of the Union session, and all of these other things that have nothing to do with her and her constituents, frankly. And so, you know, that's what you're dealing with. And there's this problem with normalizing racism. And she did slide it in. She knew what she was doing when she said boy, because you know what? You or I can't be in certain rooms and slip up and say things like that. So she should be penalized for not saying that, for saying the wrong thing as well. But if you don't care, that's how you get down. See, that's what DEI is. Here's somebody, we didn't know nothing about her. She could have been in Congress for years. We don't know her from a hill of beans. We didn't know nothing about her until she had something to say about Al Green. Now, how impactful is she if you and I and we don't know anything about her? But maybe that's what the DEI is that they be talking about.
Dana Harshberger ain't nothing but a hillbilly from Tennessee.
just a country bumpkin from Tennessee. It's as simple as that. And if you go to Memphis or Nashville, wouldn't nobody know who the hell she is.
Spot on. The comedians may be the ones that will always hold a beacon of light up. And speaking of one, we have Roderick Morrow, the black guy who tips. He's a writer, comedy writer, and an amazing podcaster, he and his wife. Sam J, hit that out of the park. I couldn't even argue. There was no
detected. I listened to it. I mean, first of all, I think it's very funny. I also think, like, dunking on the Democrats, crowd pleaser right now. Don't matter what side of the aisle you're on, everybody loves to hear something bad about the Democrats. But the thing, you know, the reality of it for me is, like, what the Democrats have to do is more complicated, and you do have to appeal to people's, like, higher selves. They don't really have a lane like Republicans have. Right. Bigotry is simple. It's very simple, and it doesn't need to be fact-checked or be true. They're eating the cats, they're eating the dogs. If that is going to make
ridiculous.
If that's going to make someone vote for you, there's not a thing a Democrat can say that will make you not vote for that person, because you just don't care. And that's, you know, I think the thing she said that was the most truthful and I mean, ironically, that made me laugh the loudest, when she was just like, they think too highly of Americans, but they still have hope and think we have our good people, and we're not. And I think that's the crux of that bit, you know. The rest is just about, like, Democratic messaging. And I don't know that there's a way to out-message this type of bigotry, because we don't necessarily have the same unifying causes in a big tent, right? It's a bunch of people kind of with their own cause, and then you tolerate everybody else's cause, even if it's not your cause. And man, it really seemed like people want to stop doing that. And that's sad, but damn.
No, I mean, I laugh, but at the same time, every day we're fighting this. I want people to read. I want you to love reading. I'm gonna do everything in my power. I want you to read to your children. I mean, listening to, you know, being here every day, it's self-preservation too. Like, we should want to call people to her higher self. This is the whole thing, right? So I'm not quitting, even though she's absolutely correct. Right. And it's the argument that I've been having off mic, low key, with a lot of people you may know, you know, about running for office and all this other BS, is because they're dealing with the current construct, which is, we are, as a group of people, as a nation, I'm not talking about me and you, as a nation, we are low vibrational, knuckle dragging ignoramus. Mm-hmm. Latin. This is what we are. We are in idiocracy. We are low vibrational oafs. We are those. We are just one notch above Neanderthal as a group, as a nation, as the United States of America. Because you don't get 74 million people to show up to vote for this nonsense unless their vibration is so low.
Unfortunately for politicians, and this is why I'm so thankless on the Democratic side, you have to run in the environment that it is. But on the Democratic side, you also have to sell what it could be.
Yeah.
So you don't get to just tell people, because you know what the simple message is to win, but everyone rejects it? I'm not Trump. That's the simplest message. It's not complicated. You ain't got to do a whole lot of reading. But people reject that message. They don't like that. Give me some hope. What's your plan for the economy? Well, that's going to be some reading, fam. Can't put that in a headline. You know, it's going to be deeper when we're going to give you a $20,000 mortgage credit. You got to do, oh, that's too much reading. I'm just going to stick with the man talking about bathroom. It's just like, damn, man, we are cooked as a society when we, and so low key, I kind of, maybe it is bad, but I just don't think Democrats should give up on that. Cause I think after that, you don't have a message. Like, not one that anybody wants to support is just, guys, I'm gonna keep it simple with you. You know, like, people are okay, what's the plan?
Do you think we've hit rock bottom? Because I feel like people had to bust their lip, face on the asphalt, you know, catch measles, do all the things. They had to do all, and they were like, all right, I get it now. Hand me a book. What I gotta do? I gotta read? Okay. All right, it's too much. Yeah. I lost everything. Okay, give me a book. Is this the pathway? My mind's gonna be open. Okay. I feel like, have we hit, I don't know if we've hit rock bottom. No,
we haven't hit rock bottom yet, but the suffering is going to keep continuing. I don't know when we'll hit that inflection point, but that's, I don't want it to be this way. I know whenever I talk like this, people give me a comment on social. Oh, really, man? I don't think. I hear what y'all saying. This is the only way I've seen it work. Everything I've ever read, this is the only way it's ever worked. Especially in this country that is addicted to white supremacy. It's got to, the shovel got to hit them. And they got to step on the rake. It's got to hit them. And then they go, oh, man, you know what? Hating black people not this important. That, unfortunately, that's just how it works. I don't know why they're addicted to it. It's not really my issue to solve. They need therapy, not me. But we, it, every it's Reconstruction, civil rights era. I mean, you had people in this country that women couldn't vote because they, you know, because they were more worried about whiteness than they were worried about aligning with black women to go get the right to vote. Like, this is a weird country with a bunch of messed up hangups. So it's always taken like a depression. It's taken the Iran-Contra affair plus a president going senile plus blah, blah, blah before they like, man, maybe we don't go that way anymore. You know, it takes economic crashes is when you see things change. Even with the Civil War, man, they took most of the capital of America, which was black people and slavery and cotton and stuff. And it was like, we finna make our own country. And it's like, I guess we'll have to do something. Like, it's not like this is not a, I don't know that you can ever take any point in time and truly say America is a good country built off of good, well-intentioned people. We've just happened to be on the right side of some stuff in the past.
Well, they brought good intention people, and they were already good intention people, community-based people here already who have the momentum of memory.
And I say this because we are not engaged in a struggle with a multi-billion dollar conglomerate because we hate somebody in the company. We are not choosing to take a moral position against this company because we have a personal vendetta against the CEO. We are engaged in this epic struggle to push back the greedy hands of corporate power and political cowardice because of the disingenuous notion that many feel as if that without lip gloss, they have to kiss the ring. And we are engaged in this battle because you don't get to walk away from your public commitments to black people and think there will not be consequences and repercussions. None of these companies would think for a moment to do how they have handled us would they do to the Jewish community. How they have handled us is not how they would handle the Asian community. They are doing it because they believe they can get away with it. We are engaged in this battle because we understand that your word has to mean something. This company should have been serious in 2020. And if they were not serious in 2020, then they should not have opened their mouths in the first place. When it is that George Floyd was killed, the CEO and president of Target, under no political pressure, made a bold proclamation that George Floyd could have been one of his employees. And as a consequence, he wanted to stand beside the family and the community. We didn't ask Target to make a promise to black people. They did it out of their own will and out of their own volition. In 2020, Target was the one who came to us and said that they were going to spend $2 billion with black-owned businesses by 2025. To be clear, we didn't ask them to do it. They volunteered. It was Target who said that they pledged to support black nonprofit organizations and to fund scholarships for black students to the tune of $100 million. We didn't ask Target to do it. Target said they wanted to do it. And it was Target who said that they were going to increase black representation within their workforce. According to a CNBC report, Target promised to increase black representation in their workforce by 20%. And according to Forbes magazine, they pledged to give $10 million to social justice causes, and thus far, they've walked away from all of it. So let's be very clear. I want you to understand, Target board, CEO, and staff, that opening a store in the Black community is not an investment in Black communities. Opening a store in the Black community is just another opportunity for you to make money. Nobody in America spends more money than Black people. To our own detriment, I do not say that with a badge of honor or with pride, but we are the nation's lead consumers and embarrassingly least producers. We are the engine that moves the infrastructure of the consumer economy in America. If they want to sell anything, they've got to put a Black personal empowerment. Is not knowing how to balance a checkbook. We need to know how to have access to capital. To get businesses off the ground. Something is amazingly... always, without fail, get a loan to get a used car, but cannot get a loan to build a new house because of what is going on in America. During the summer of 2020, when George Floyd was murdered in Minneapolis by a white police officer, Target claimed to have seen the light. But now, 5 years later, there seems to be a lunar eclipse. And the insulting part is that they want to put all of us in Ray-Ban sunglasses. They expected nobody to care about breaking the promise to Black people, because America is used to doing that. They said they won't mind. They are just accustomed to the trauma of broken promises. We promised 40 acres and a mule, and we gave them Section 8 housing and a bus pass. We promised if they would fight for democracy and fight in our wars, that they could come back home and find themselves treated with decency, and your fathers and brothers and uncles still could not take advantage of the GI Bill. Because in their minds, respecting Black people is not something America ever has to do. In their minds, respecting the Black community is not a matter of financial life or death.